Well, today's episode of the Hot Nerd Podcast, we're going to open up a new mini-series completely focused on the actions around the principles and ideas of human and organizational performance. So let's do this. Welcome to another episode of the Hot Nerd Podcast. I am your host, Sam Goodman, the Hot Nerd LLC. Make sure you head over to the website, www.thehotnerd.com, for fundamentals, learning teams, support, and so much more. Send us an email, thehotnerd@gmail.com, and be sure to follow along with us on all things social media at The Hot Nerd or at Sam Goodman. Welcome to today's episode. Hello. Howdy, hi, everybody. I got my cold brew here. Listen to this. Ready to rock and roll with another episode of the Hop Nerd Podcast. My name is Sam Goodman of the Hop Nerd LLC, creator and founder of Starting Points, Operationally Curious Questions, the card decks and the journals and the framework and all that kind of sort of cool stuff that we've got going on over there, and the creator and producer and all of whatever you want to call that that goes into creating this thing, the Hop Nerd Podcast. Thanks for being here. We are on episode number 359. Yeah. Every time I throw that number out there, I'm like, holy crap, we've been doing this for a long time, and I'm still loving every minute of it. I know when I first started this thing, as any podcaster will probably tell you, you are probably a podcaster listening to this right now. You think that at some point, at least when you first start, you're like, I'm going to totally run out of things to talk about. Nope. As long as you're willing to sit down and record it, you can make episodes. The world gives you plenty of stuff. When you're out there doing what we're doing and actually in the trenches of bringing about this change or whatever subject you're working on, like actually doing that stuff, I mean, the stories write themselves. You don't have to like sit around and go, what do I talk about? What do I say here? Life gives you all that. And that's the cool thing about the pod here is that I get to share with you just like real life experiences. And that leads us to our conversation, at least over the next 5, 6, 10 episodes. I wanted to create something around action. Yeah, around action. There's a lot of stuff out there that's talking about like, well, and me too. I think this is important. I'm not downplaying this at all. We're talking about how we think about things. And human and organization performance really is how we think about things. It's not so much on what we do, but it's how we think about things, which influences our approaches, our tactics, the what we actually do. But I wanted to take each of these principles over some time and go through some of the 10 ideas, at least the key ones, and maybe unpack some stuff beyond that and answer some of that question, at least to the best of my ability. And I'll get to that in a second around, okay, well, what do I do with that? Because that's what I do in real life. Like the time that I spend with organizations, yep, we talk about principles. Yep, we talk about how to do learning teams. There's some action built in, kind of sort of right there. Yep, we talk about the 10 ideas. And yep, we talk about all the stuff that we talk about right here. But the great thing about spending time with organizations is that we then talk about, well, what the heck does that mean here? What do I actually do? What are some options? What are some paths that we could take? What are some levers that we could actually pull? What are some buttons we could push? What are some things that we can actually do? That's the real life conversation that I have every single day outside of the podcast and outside of social media. Boots on ground, talking to people, leading learning teams, facilitating learning teams, helping people with operational curiosity out in the field, helping people use our Starting Points cards and showing people how to embed operational curiosity into their day today, work, lives, reality, work, worlds. Which leads me to Starting Points. I've got to tell you about that because we're still in the intro here. Make sure you go over to thehopnerd.com/SP, Starting Points, /SP. Pete, you can pick up our original card decks. We have some great volume discounts there. The more you order, the cheaper that they are. We have the learning journals over on Amazon, and you can join the crowd of hundreds of organizations at this point that are starting to license our operationally curious card decks and questions and the framework overall, allowing them to customize and print their own card decks in their, is it livery? Livery? I don't know. I don't fly planes. I don't race cars. I don't know. And I'm a redneck from Appalachia. I don't know what you call that. In their branding, in their colors, in their palette, with their logos. How cool is that? But not only print those things or create learning journals on their own, which and the card decks on their own, which not only allows for customization, not only allows for all of those cool, like, we're going to create some questions for ourselves and embed in here. Not only that, and then the help that I can provide to help come up with those better questions, something that I specialize in. But then it's also like, and the logos, all the stuff we just said. But then on top of that, it's so much more cost effective. Right? You guys in your large organizations have relationships with printers, and some of you guys have this capability in-house. Several that I'm working with, like 5 or 10 of them, have this in-house. They print them on their own. They make the boxes on their own. It's super, super, duper, duper cool. Like, it's awesome. But not only that, embedding these better questions, this methodology of starting points, operationally curious questions, into their other pre-event learning processes, into their post-event learning review processes, into their mobile apps, into all kinds of stuff. So it's just a cool thing. thehopnerd.com/SP. SP as in starting points. You can also check out the website if you need a hand with human and organizational performance. I'm here to give you that hand. I think I'm the person to help you if you're looking for that next person to help you facilitate that learning team, teach your organization HOP fundamentals or the use of learning teams, operational learning and curiosity and pre and post event learning. And all of the above, you know all the stuff that I do. You can get in touch with me at thehopnerd.com or learn more about that at, maybe not enough cold brew. You can get in touch with me. Well, I guess you can get in touch with me at thehopnerd.com. Probably the easiest thing to do here would be to tell you just to send me an email at thehopnerd@gmail.com, and you can learn more about the services that I offer over at thehopnerd.com. Pretty easy. You just navigate the website, handy dandy, easy peasy lemon squeezy, little menu up at the top. You can click on starting points, you can click on work with me or Sam or whatever it says, you can click book a consult, you can scroll around on that main page, request a quote, just drop me the info, what you're looking to do, and I can get you some info over real quick, and we can make it happen. My calendar is always going compressing, so let me know sooner than later if you want to make sure that your dates are available. I think I'm supposed to also tell you to like, share, subscribe, do all that kind of sort of stuff. Anywhere that you can follow along, interact, share, post, do all that stuff. It helps us more than you can ever imagine. And we've got a bunch of cool stuff over at the merch store that I would encourage you to check out if you want to rep your favorite podcast out there, at least your favorite podcast in the human and organizational performance improvement, operational learning, operational curiosity, and or safety space. That probably niches it down pretty good. You can rep the Hop Nerd stuff. It's over on the website. So with all of that being out of the way, thanks for being here. Let's jump right on in to today's first episode of the mini series, mini episodes. I don't know. Let's just do it. So I think the first thing here is to talk about the disclaimer that I was working my way towards in the intro. I didn't quite get there. It just felt more natural just to cut into this. But I think this disclaimer needs to be said, and my goal, at least in my brain bucket here, is to insert this into every episode as we go, because it's really easy. Let me rewind and say this. I think most of us in this world of human and organizational performance and beyond, just rolling in maybe more of these approaches where we're trying to humanize things, accept the messy reality of our organizations and the uniqueness of our organizations, of our work world, and on and on and on and on. The complication and complexities of all that. We're very, very, very shy. We're a bit bashful around just saying, here's what you do. And for good reason. I tend to avoid that a lot because I don't know that it's as simple as, here's what you do. I don't think that it's that simple. I don't think so. Because let's get real here. That sounded like AI, didn't it? Let's get real. Dead giveaway if you're reading all these dumb LinkedIn posts out there that everybody's like mass producing with like 47 emojis and like, here's the real cold hard truth. Like, but seriously, let's get real. I don't know you. Now, let me rewind again. I do know many of you, and I work with a lot of your organizations. And so I do know some of that, but I'm approaching this disclaimer from the perspective of I don't really know you and your organization. I don't know what you should do. Yeah. Now, how unconsultant of me. I mean, if you get on LinkedIn right now, back to those funny, AI generated, here's the cold hard truth. Here's what they sound like. Here's the cold hard truth. I have solved every problem. Let me teach you how I know how to do zero best. Even though zero has been horrific and maimed and killed more of people than has ever helped, I have a consultant and I have solved it and I have global experience and I have awarded myself an award and I am here to teach you how to do that. Yeah, I say this all the time and I reply to this all the time because I get comment bombed with crap like this all the time. Well, send me your address. I'll send you a check since you've solved it. And I never get the address because they haven't solved it. They haven't. And the point that I'm making here is that we haven't solved it. Now, the thing that I'm really saying here is that I don't know, which I think is a really powerful statement. Back to that shyness that we have in our new view kind of approaches. It's all context driven. It's all driven by your actual operational reality. So the disclaimer is this, is I'm going to try my best to give you some pretty specific actions around each of these principles. But that does not mean that you should just go do this. You have to actually do the work of operational learning and seeking to understand and knowing where your organization is currently at and examining that against some of these ideas for action. There is no do A, then do B, then do C, and human and organizational performance and operational excellence is yours. Anybody that tells you that is lying to you. Stop sending them your checks. They are lying to you. Anyone that says that is lying. If they don't know your organization, if they have not spent time with your organization, when they say, yeah, but we have a very specific framework that we have patented and trademarked and shat out of our booties, and it's perfect. It's not. They're lying to you. If they don't know you, they're lying to you. Yeah. So this is the disclaimer part. The disclaimer part is telling you that I don't know. Here are a couple things. Let me reduce this down into a couple things. Number one, you have to understand your organization. The best way to do that is through operational learning, being operationally curious, seeking to understand and learning more about the current lived reality within your organization, not how you think things happen and not happen or how you hope things happen in your organization, but how they actually happen. The actual reality that people live with day in and day out, down, up, and throughout your organization. Number one, you've got to do that work. You have to. Nobody can do that work for you. Some people can help you, but you've got to do it. You have to understand where you are currently at. Number two, there are no easy actions, silver bullets. Everybody's looking for a secret handshake. Like, well, let's call Sam and Sam will come in and teach us a secret handshake. And then human and organizational performance is easy. No, I can help you. There's a lot of great people out there that can help you. There's a lot of awesome people out there, like my buddy Steve Scott or Bob Edwards or Andy Baker or me. Ding, 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 me right here. The HomNerd@gmail.com. There's a lot of people that can help you with this stuff. But there are no easy answers. When we come spend time with you, it's going to be a lot of teaching you about human and organizational performance, teaching you about these better beliefs, these better assumptions, and tactics that are specific to your organization based off of what we learn from your organization. But nobody's going to come in and say like, wiggity, 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 like slap your hands behind the back, high five, low five, chest bump, now it's yours. It doesn't work like that. So that's probably part number two. No silver bullets with the disclaimer. And so I guess the last part here is just take everything around action with a grain of salt. Take these better beliefs, these better assumptions, and generate specific better tactics and approaches within your organization. Some of what I share with you is probably going to be great. You're going to take some of that and go, yes, that's a great place for me to go work on this thing. I can actually go do that right now. But that doesn't mean that you just copy and paste what I'm about to tell you, at least not without a really firm understanding of what you got going on in your work world. Now, last but not least, I don't understand how I get accused of this, but I don't know. But most of the hop community gets accused of this for some reason, that it's this idea of we want to throw the baby out with the bathwater. Not only that, we want to throw out the little thing that you bathe the baby in and then go outside and then set it on fire. And then once we set it on fire, sweep up the ashes and then run it through the garbage disposal and then collect it, you know, over maybe at the end pipe of the house and then, you know, pour that into a barrel and then blow it up with an atomic bomb. Like, no one credible in this world is saying anything like that. In fact, they're mostly saying the opposite. Almost everyone is saying the opposite. Don't throw out the baby with the bathwater. So the thing that I'm going to tell you here is if I say something's crap, just based on my experience and what I've seen, and maybe in our world, it's generally crap in practice. That doesn't mean that it's crap for you. I'm the very last person in the world that's going to tell you to stop doing something if said something is working well for you. So again, that's just rambly disclaimer. I hope as we get through this 8 or 9 or 10 episodes of this mini-sode or mini-series, or I don't know what to call this, then I hope that that disclaimer gets a bit shorter, but I feel like I need to say all that stuff because back to maybe the first stop on our little adventure here, we're very shy about just saying, hey, go do this. And we're super shy about that because just saying, hey, go do this can cause more harm than good because there's a lot of desire for secret handshakes and silver bullets. There's a lot of desire for take the tool and forget the principles. There's a lot of desire for give me easy, do it for me. And that doesn't work. It doesn't work. It won't work well for you if you try to turn this into a checklist and then just go do this stuff in your organization. It will help you a ton if you take what's good, what you need, and leave what you don't need. It will work good. Great if you don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. It will work extremely well for you if you use some of the ideas for action as starting points for you. Back to starting points, operationally curious questions, thehopnerd.com/SP. Yeah, I gotta throw in starting points again. They're just super handy. Go check them out. It will work well for you if you use them as starting points and you go, you know, that's a great idea, but that doesn't work exactly for us. How would this work in our organization? Ooh, this is how I need to tweak this, tune that, try this. That worked okay. Tweak this, tune this, try that. Okay, that didn't work. Tweak this, tune this, try that. Exactly. Start small. Try some of these actions that sound like they'll work well for you. Tweak them, tune them, mold them, fit them to your organization. So we're 18 minutes in and we've only got through the disclaimer, but I think it's super important. Future episodes. Hey, just note here, future episodes, the disclaimer will be much, 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 much shorter. I'll probably sit down and like record like a, you know, this is not medical advice, like something like that to throw in the beginning of this thing. But it's just an important conversation to be had because I don't want you to walk away from this going, oh, well, Sam just gave me exactly what I need to do, and then I just go do that. That's just not how this works. Okay, let's jump into air is normal, our very first hot principle. And I'm going to try my best. I was thinking about maybe changing these up and doing them in a bit of a different order, but they do kind of feed into one another. So I will start right here. Let's get ready to start with principle numero uno. I think I said that right. Air is normal. Are you looking for a handy dandy, easy peasy, lemon squeezy kind of way to get conversations flowing around operational reality within your organization? These conversations around work is done versus work is imagined, pain points, problems, even best practices, the good stuff, the great stuff. Well, Starting Points is exactly what you're looking for. Starting Points, the original operationally curious card deck, packed full of a ton of learning focused, operationally curious icebreaker questions to get those conversations flowing, helping your organization to effectively learn, improve, and innovate. Head over to thehopnerd.com/SP to download our free sample deck, to purchase the original card decks and learning journals, or to inquire about licensing options so that you can customize Starting Points with your brand, your logo, and your questions for your specific organization's needs. Again, that's thehopnerd.com/SP. Back to the show. So where do we start? We start right where we start with arguably the most fundamental pillar of human and organizational performance. Principle numero uno, air is normal. So yeah, we know this one pretty good. Air is normal. It's not amazing. It's not unique. It's not a sign of incompetence. It's not something that bad workers do. It's a pretty fundamental part of just being a human, especially a human that works in a complicated and complex work worlds. Yeah, so, I mean, we can think about all of the different places that we make errors on a day-to-day basis, from that typo to walking into the wrong room. If you spend a lot of time in airports like I do, I make a ton of errors where I walk into the wrong restroom. Yeah, and if you're bored and you want to just sit around and watch people like make errors in completely oblivious to the fact that they're making them, which is kind of what makes an error an error. Back to error being normal. I don't intend my actions, and I definitely do not intend the outcome. I do not intend to walk into the wrong restroom, and I do not intend the result to be me turning like glowing neon red with embarrassment and going, sorry, and running out while, somebody is sitting there on the bench across from the restroom laughing at people walking into the wrong restroom. Air is normal. The point that I was trying to share with you is that if you're ever stuck in an airport like I am a lot, and you get tired of like sitting at the Starbucks, or if you're super fancy sitting in the Sky Miles Lounge or whatever, like the Admiral's Lounge or whatever they call it now, go find you a nice little cozy place to sit near one of the restrooms. Not to be creepy, but to watch people make that mistake. I promise, like, you'll see at least maybe 5 to 10 an hour make that mistake, because air is super normal. And I think we recognize this one pretty good just as people. Like, we know that. We can feel that in ourselves. Like, I did not mean for that to happen. I genuinely did not mean for that to happen. I did not mean to do that. And I did not mean for that consequence, especially when we have a consequence that then shows us that we made an error. A lot of times we make a ton of errors that have no consequences, and we don't even realize that they were errors. Experiencing that, noticing that we made an error, we go, well, yeah, I just made an error. And I didn't mean, I made a wrong turn. I walked into the wrong restroom. I read that email 14 times and I still missed that. Normal. Now, in our daily lives and as individuals, we tend to accept those pretty well. Even big ones, we tend to accept those pretty well. We don't do such a good job of accepting those in others. Yeah, we kind of suck at that for a lot of biases, right? We do that. We're bad. We're kind of bad at that. We have been bad at that at work. And especially if it has consequences. Really, 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 really bad. And I tend to think about this. My mindset around errors is it's one of the outcomes that you can see. Because we only label something an error usually after the fact, after something bad has happened, after said consequence. We want to label it as human error. But we completely ignore it when that adaptation, which to me, that's really what we're talking about. Error is maybe an output of human adaptation, right? Like, we're figuring stuff out and I'm tweaking, I'm tuning, I'm adjusting, I'm bending rules, I'm sometimes breaking the rules. If you wanted to get like trying to bucket these, you could get into mistake and what I would call, I get a lot of heat for this, well-intended violation, because well-intended violations are always bad. No, like, people bend and break the rules because sometimes they have to bend and break the rules, because if they don't bend and break the rules, then nothing happens, and every leader in the organization is kind of nod, wink, wink, like, I know you have to bend and break the rule, but we have to have that rule, but we agree that I'm not really going to say anything to you for bending and breaking the rule. Well-intended violations. They're just figuring it out, and they're mostly getting it right, and then, boom, big bad, or even maybe that was a little smaller. Here we go. Hold on, wait a second. Boom, boom, big bad consequence. Not as bad a consequence. We just panic. And then it's human error because someone made a mistake. Someone made an error. Someone had a well-intended violation. And we freak out. We're not as good at this part at work. Of going, well, that's normal. That's not interesting. In fact, the fact that somebody made an error, a mistake, or a well-intended violation, or insert whatever you want to call it here, tends to be really, really, really stinking boring. Yeah, that doesn't mean that there's not some responsibility there or accountability there. Of course it doesn't mean that. Like, back to bad raps Hop gets for no reason, I think. But it is super duper 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 normal. And we move towards who failed instead of what failed. which is not good if we actually want to leave things better than how we found them. If we actually want to sustainably improve over time, we move towards who failed and who is to blame instead of what failed and what can we fix. We try to fix people because we move towards who failed, who is to blame, who needs fixed. How do we fix people? Well, you can't. So what do? You can't fix stupid. You just fire it. Yeah. And then nothing good. The situation persists. You end up in that thing that's commonly become known as the blame loop or the fear loop, where the problem persists. Information is driven underground. It festers. It grows. Someone comes along, makes an error because people make errors. Duh, that's what we do. We're really great at it. And then we trigger that whole thing all over again, where we blame, shame, retrain, don't actually fix nothing, drive information even deeper underground. And we just keep going zoom, zoom, zoom on their little hamster wheel of mediocrity in our organizations. In our more traditional approaches, we have viewed errors as personal failings, as failures of the individual, as just lack of attention, carelessness, negligence, not following the rules. It assumes that if just people were better people, that's really what you're saying. No one wants to peel back that rotten onion. When we say someone made an error and it was because they lost situational awareness, when we say that someone made an error and if they cared more about not making errors, they would make less errors, if you keep peeling back those layers, error, okay, situational awareness, okay, if they cared more, they would be more situationally aware. Ooh, this rotten onion's getting a little stinky towards the middle. Okay, well, behind that one, what do we have here? Oh, okay, so if they should have cared more, good workers care more. So, another layer here. So we must be dealing with a bad worker, a bad human. What do we do with bad humans? Well, they're bad. You can't fix bad humans because a good human, a good worker would care enough to be situationally aware 100% of the time. We find ourselves at the core of that rotten onion, which just says blame, fire, shame, pain, bad people. And it's almost never bad people. That's why it is. That's why the onion is rotten. It's going to make you sick. It's going to make your organization sick. We paint this as an individual problem. If they paid more attention, if they were trained better, errors wouldn't happen. It assumes that perfection within our employees is not only achievable, but the standard. Good luck. Yeah, good luck. Good luck. Good luck. But maybe back to some the principle itself, that error is normal. So we don't get too deep down the rabbit hole because we are moving in the direction of action. Let's think about maybe our approaches, or if we believe that errors are not normal, that they're abnormal failures of individuals, what happens when we discover an error or we have a consequence, an event, as an operational outcome that surprises us a bit? First, we look for the person who made the mistake. Of course we do. Next, we label their action or inaction as the cause. That's it. Yeah, they just should have tried harder. We focus on trying to fix that person. Blame, shame, retrain, usually fired. Yeah. And then it goes beyond, because then we not only blame, shame, retrain, and fire that person, then we'll blame, shame, retrain, and sometimes fire people around that person. But then we'll move on to write even harsher, worse rules. Yeah, we'll write like 3 rules that say the same thing and then add a zero tolerance disciplinary policy around it. We'll send out warning memos and put like letters in people's files and like, don't let us catch you having anything like this or else. And then we're surprised that people don't tell us stuff. All of that kind of happens. You know that old song and dance. Back to our fear loop or blame loop, blame cycle, blame loop, whatever you want to call it. The underlying issues, the true issues, the things that we can actually put our hands on and improve, because we can't fix people. If you haven't got that yet, good luck trying to fix people. You're not. When you find the cure for all of us humans and our human-y bits, again, tell us where to send the check to. Every company on the planet will probably send you about $1 trillion. You can't fix people. So again, good luck to you. The actual issues, the underlying issues, the system issues, the problems, even just those little things that are like, this is frustrating and this doesn't work and I really need it, I can't get it. All those little tweaks and tunes that just makes it more likely to have more positive operational outcomes more consistently around that, whatever this thing is, all of that stuff gets driven deeper, 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 deeper. It remains hidden. It remains unaddressed. And as we know, stuff in our work worlds, hidden, it doesn't just stay the same. And it usually doesn't get better on its own. It usually festers, rots, grows, and gets worse over time. Even if it stays the same, if there's any element of critical risk there, maybe we got lucky on the last one. And the next time, because someone will come along and have an error around something like this again, or this particular thing, and trigger all of this stuff, resulting in an event, and maybe this time it kills somebody. Or maybe this time it is far worse and it causes much more catastrophic consequences. Really where we get is that trust erodes. Learning stops. The system continues usually to get worse over time. That's the blame cycle in a nutshell. And it's incredibly damaging to our organizations. Now on to our action part here. All with this belief, starting with this belief that error is normal, that if we assume that error is really strinking, that tells me I need to start drinking. Here's some cold brew. If we assume that error is normal, that mistakes are pretty stinking normal. Again, we talked about well-intended violation, but, you know, there's some buckets here. If you want to bucket it, I don't know that it does us all that good to, like, bucket stuff. We think that by, like, defining and bucketing, then we'll solve the problem. I don't know that that's true. That's why I tend to stick with just error is normal and kind of bucket all the stuff into that. There, I've solved it. I bucketed it. I defined it clearly. It helps sometimes for us to maybe categorize those things to say that error is I didn't intend my actions, and I definitely didn't intend the outcome. Mistake, I intended my actions. I definitely did not intend the outcome, which means that a well-intended violation means I intended my actions, but I did not intend that outcome. A violation is just a mistake. We put a fancy word on it, and we have to say it because everybody, and I have to say it as well intended, but it's just a mistake. But when we assume that all that normal, when all of that is assumed to be normal, you acknowledge that human error occurred and you see it as a symptom, not the cause. As I like to put it, human error is the beginning of the story, not the end. When you look for it, you are always going to find someone made a mistake, someone made an error, someone screwed up, someone made violations, well-intended, trying to get their work done. Of course, boring and normal. You're going to find that when you have big, catastrophic operational surprises. You're going to find that when you have little, maybe not so catastrophic, operational surprises. You're going to find all that stuff just as much, if not more, when work goes well, which tells us, ding, 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 winner, winner, chicken dinner, you guessed it, error is so normal that it's boring. We see it as the symptom, not the cause. The next thing that we start to see, this is where we start to get into actions. Change the questions that you ask. Instead of saying, who screwed up? Who failed? Quite literally, ask the question. Action, ding, 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 action. What failed? Yeah, there's your first action. Ask the what failed question instead of the who failed question. The next question, ding, 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 action that you can ask here. And I think it's a great way. I used to, and I continue to do this. When I worked internal, I would do this, especially in those situations, post-event learning stuff where we were really primed up to say, like, that person was stupid. I do this a lot with post-event learning stuff, whether it's learning teams or helping organizations with learning reviews. To set the stage, we start with this. How did it make sense? It completely changes the lens, right? Instead of saying, well, this made sense to me. Why did they not do this? It changes our perspective. Again, action here. Ask that question. How did this make sense? Because it totally made sense to everyone involved until it suddenly didn't make sense anymore. It at least made enough sense to proceed. Listen, we know this, that if I can look into the future and say, ooh, step three is me dead, I'm always stopping at step two. We know this. For us to move forward with just about anything in our life, even if we have some hesitation or reservation, it still has to make enough sense for us to move forward. So it made sense enough. It either made complete and total sense or at least made enough sense for us to move forward. Our job now, back to this action, is to seek to understand how this made sense. You can completely just ask that question right at the beginning of post-event learning stuff. if it's pre-event and it's like violation kind of stuff, ask that question. How does it make sense to bend this rule? Because it's making sense. Or people wouldn't be bending or breaking this rule. How does this make sense? Of course, it makes sense. You can tweak and tune your post-event stuff. I'm going to use the term that we mostly use that gives a lot of people ick. Accident investigation processes, procedures. You can rewrite those questions, you know. You know this, right? Like, that was not, this was not like from up on high. It was not like put into stone tablets and carried down to the people. Like, that is not where it came from. This stuff was crafted by human hands, if not by your hands, by hands before you, yours that were just human. And you have Microsoft Word. And you probably have the editable version of these procedures. And you probably know how to get it approved. At least the person you got to go say, hey, approve this. You know how to do this. We can actually change those procedures and tune them more towards that. If you have that question that's like, did somebody make a mistake? Like, delete. Like, boring. That's not where we want to go. Was this called a human error? Well, what do you mean, right? Duh. Because, yeah, of course, I'm always going to find that. How did this make sense? Rewrite it through that lens. There's another action for you. If you really want to embed and operationalize this principle of error is normal, change those questions that we ask, because I promise you, you got a form. You've got an incident reporting something that probably costs you like millions of dollars in licensing every single year to use this incident reporting something. You know, the one that sends out the automatic incident notifications, but yet you still have to work a printed out phone tree that your predecessor gave you that's like duct taped to that little metal flip up cabinet in your office that if you don't call all those numbers and half of them are wrong or have been changed because the org chart has changed like 14 times since you've been there. If you don't call all those, even though they send out this automatic alert to everyone, then like you get in trouble. Yeah, you've got that thing. You can change the questions that it asks. And a lot of this starts with better questions, better answers. So there was like a bunch of actions just packed in right there. Continuing with this, focus on fixing the actual condition. Focus on the conditions in which people work. Move away from person and focus more on condition. That doesn't mean that you don't support people. That doesn't mean that you don't care for people. Again, bad raps hop get for some dumb reason. And I think it's just that people want to keep selling like observation cards. Like the person is the most important part. Of course they are. Duh. And they're so important that we owe them really, really great working conditions that help minimize their opportunities for errors and at the very least minimize when they have these errors resulting in catastrophic operational outcomes. And back to sustainability, that person isn't going to work here forever. And that person might know exactly how to work with this said thing. And you guys are facing this. I know you're facing this because everyone's facing this. And I spent time with so many of you talking about you facing this. That person's getting ready to leave soon. And you don't have a whole bunch of experience in between. You don't. You've got like retiree, like leaving in a couple years, and you got brand new, and you don't have much in between. So the knowledge of dealing with said condition that is wacky, wonky, error-inducing, causes big problems if you don't know exactly how to do it, and that muscle memory of dealing with that every single day doesn't exist anymore. So you have to fix the condition. The relying on people to just like know that that thing will cut your fingers off doesn't work anymore because there is no knowledge transfer there. And we shouldn't be relying on knowledge transfer and, hey, don't stick your hand in that thing to keep people from cutting off their fingers. Maybe that's the first point. But you get the point that I'm driving towards. If you have things that eat fingers, make it really hard for said thing to eat fingers. Something you can do. Yeah, that's a physical something you can do. If you have something out there that it's we're one button away from shutting down the plant, and Bob knows not to press that button, but the new folks coming in, they don't know. It's a big red button that says, push me. Maybe change that process to where pushing that button doesn't shut down the whole plant and make you have a really bad day. At the very least, maybe put like a big thing over that button that says, don't push this button unless you really mean to push this button. Because if you push this button right now, you're going to shut the whole plant down. We're going to have a really bad day. Fix the condition. Move towards condition. Improve conditions. And you will have sustainable improvement over time. People see that reporting errors and vulnerabilities leads to learning and improvement, not punishment. I try to avoid the big PS word. When I think of PS, I think of Photoshop. Yeah. I don't think about psychological safety because it's quickly become just another one of those things like, call somebody for a secret handshake and we'll have psychological safety. How do we put that on our spreadsheet? And it's become that. But it is outcome here, right? Whatever you want to call it. I call it more of just we're creating an environment in which people can tell us the truth. Now, I'm not skipping ahead here. We're going to cover this one in depth. But the way that we respond, the way that we move from react to respond when people bring us the good, the great, the bad, the ugly, the scary information of an event, of how work normally gets done, of errors, mistakes, well-intended violations, when we move from react, panic, meltdown, to respond, curiosity, learn, improve, people feel that. Those are actions that you actually can take. Again, we can build some of that into our processes. We've talked about that. We can move away from blame and shame and retrain in the first 12 hours or else, leader, if you do not examine for wrongdoing and punish someone, then you better be able to explain that real quick. We can stop. We can press pause on that. Yeah, of course we can. We can change all that. We can change how we approach these things from a timeline perspective. Even if you're like, I'm going to keep my stick. I'm going to keep my disciplinary action. Good, you probably should have a disciplinary action process. Of course you should. But it should be like at the end of the process. It should be like, we've exhausted all of our other options. We have squeezed every ounce of learning out of this that we can get. And really what we found out is that Bob was running around with a razor knife just cutting off people's fingers. Well, yeah. Okay, I'm with you. Let's get rid of Bob. That seems like somebody that doesn't fit in here. But that's usually not the case. You can prioritize and you can move things around. You can prioritize response. You can quite literally give your leaders better questions that instead of asking who failed, what do they deserve based off of how bad that failure was or how bad that failure could have been, moving them down the path of blame, shame, and retrain, you can move them more towards that restorative response-focused questions. That sounds like, is somebody hurt? If somebody's hurt, what do they need? Who's responsible for getting them what they need? Are we safe, stable, and secure? If we're not safe, stable, and secure, how do we make our plant, our systems, safe, stable, and secure? Those are questions we have to answer anyways, and those are the priority right at the beginning, not who messed up. Duh. Yeah, 12 hours to fire somebody. I'm more focused on 12 hours. How do we make sure that we're okay? Let's make sure we're okay. And then once we make sure that we are okay, our people are okay, and our operations are okay, then move towards the question, what do we need to learn? Where do we need to learn? Who do we need to learn from? Move down that path. Again, things you can actually write out in process and procedure, embedding it and operationalizing it into your workflows, generating sustainability because it's baked into your processes now at this point. And that response, the way that we respond and we show people that that is how we consistently respond, we start to hear more rather than hear less. Good, solid operational information allowing us to make better operational decisions. This valuable information comes to light about system problems and weaknesses and brittleness and frustration points and friction and rubs and this is great and this is bad. And we start to hear that so we can actually improve. And hearing all of that information allows us the opportunity to start learning pre-event. And I think it's duh, right? It's duh. It's that fear loop versus the trust loop, the blame, shame, retrain loop versus the learn and improve loop. Trust grows. We get more information. Learning accelerates. Performance improves because things are actually getting fixed. So there's a whole bunch of ideas for action just kind of baked in right there. We just have to understand that accepting error is normal. To me, it is the first step. It is the gateway. This error is normal. Mistakes are normal. Well-intended violations are normal. That is the gateway to genuine operational learning. That is the starting point for helping us to create an environment in which we can operationally learn, improve, and innovate. It allows us to stop wasting energy on blaming people and start investing time into understanding and improving the conditions in which people work, the context in which people work. Remember, it's really hard, if not impossible, to change the human condition. And I'm going to say impossible, but you can change the conditions under which humans work. You can improve things that surround us, infinitely flawed and fallible people that are really, really good at figuring stuff out, really, really, really good at creating success where there shouldn't be success, and occasionally really, really, really good at blowing stuff up. You can make it really hard to blow stuff up. All right. Let's unpack a little bit more into the action space, because this is action. This is where I want to wrap up, I think. Again, I'm winging this. I'm sorry, I'm crunching on ice and drinking cold brew. I'm not editing that out. There's your ASMR for the day. But let's maybe wrap up each one of these with some like really specific, at least really actionable actions. Boom, boom, boom. Zoom, zoom, zoom. Bow, 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 bow. Like, what's that? The rave horn? Bow, 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 bow. Let's wrap it up with some really like actionable actions, 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 actionable actions, actions, actions. And let's start here. Action number one, change your language. Words matter. Yeah, of course they do. We know this. Yeah, sticks and stones, yeah, but words actually matter in our organizations because they shape the work worlds around us. They matter because they help to prioritize or deprioritize things. Words matter because they shape the actions that we take. How we think about things, hop being something that shapes how we think about things, it shapes because of based on what we think, the tactics, the approaches, the things that we go down that path. So with the change your language thing, stop asking who and shift to what. Instead of asking who failed, ask what failed. Next, with change your language, use neutral, objective descriptions of actions during investigations and discussions. What I'm saying there is to avoid loaded terms. Avoid things that have that bit of a blade in them. Failed to. How does that make you feel? Insert your name here. Failed to. You're not very good, right? You don't want to be a part of this conversation, nor do I. Careless, inattentive, lost situational awareness, human error. Avoid those things as your final conclusion. A lot of this stuff is counterfactual anyways. It's always the woulda, shoulda, coulda thing, which you know what? It doesn't matter. It's counterfactual because it didn't happen. Saying that it should have happened doesn't help us at this point. Understanding how it made sense for it not to happen. That starts to move us down a better path. Describe the actions taken, the context, and avoid judgment. Now, the next part here around air, I'm going to say something about air, but around our language is this. Talk about errors openly. Yeah, you have to create that environment first. You have to lay that groundwork first. You have to show people that it's okay and that when they stick their toe in that water, that they're not going to get beheaded. Like, they're not going to get tarred and feathered. They're not going to get blamed, shamed, retrained. They're not going to get fired. That when they say, hey, I mess this up. Hey, I break this rule. Hey, I do all this with good intent, and this is why. You're not going to panic. You're not going to shit yourself. You're not going to, like, throw a chair or Kool-Aid man through a wall and go, who am I firing today, kids? Like, you can't do any of that stuff. Back to tying into the last principle that we'll talk about here around, you know, the way that we respond matters. You have to create an environment in which we can talk about errors openly. Not as opportunities for blame, shame, and retrain, but as opportunities for learning and improvement. These are learning opportunities, not failures. These are learning opportunities, not career offending offenses. These are learning opportunities, and they're normal. So normalize that discussion and use that discussion as a path to improvement. When leaders share their own fallibility, when I'm as a leader and I can talk about that stuff, it sets a really, really, really interesting tone. People start to go, oh, I'm talking about this stuff. I remember, story time, sorry. That's part of this. It's always story time. I'm getting some cold brew before. You've heard me set up in my chair. You know this is a good one. I remember when we were starting my last internal organization, you know, where I like actually had a chair in an office and worked in a company. The last one of these that I worked in, and I love this organization, I still love them. A lot of good friends still work there, and they are kick-ass people, and they do like the coolest things ever, and they are leading the way in a lot of hop stuff. I think they're like the bee's knees. They remain nameless because you can find out who that was pretty super stinking easy, but it's just not my place to say their name. It's just not. You know how this works. But I remember when we were first starting on our journey with this, and first starting is a bit of a loose term because we'd been working on this in secret for a number of years before we got to the point of officially starting. If you want to learn more about that, you can go over to the blog at thehopnerd.com. I've written a couple articles on that. I keep rewriting and revising those. And there's one over there that's got a lot of great stuff in it around actionable things in line with this series. Oh, and speaking of which, I need to pull all of these episodes into a blog. Maybe we'll do that as we go. We'll pull these into blogs and maybe put them out one by one with some writing associated with it, or maybe at least a transcript of this rambling mess. We'll see what happens. Sorry. I'm thinking out loud here to you. I hope that sounds like cool because I'm going to do it unless I get an email tomorrow that says, don't do it. But back to story time. we'd been on this journey secretly for a couple of years. We'd officially just started this journey, and we were doing this thing where we were learning from people. Now, before we could get to this point of like getting operational learning up and running, and what I mean by that is going around and spending time with a large chunk of the organization, seeking to understand our current lived operational reality. These are all actions you can take, by the way. So we would know, like have a planning point. We know what we need to attack first, what we need to attack next. Yeah, so we could construct a bit of our recipe. We were having these kind of pre-meetings with a little bit of this loose team of what most people refer to as hop champions. I like to call it our little hop army. Insert whatever here. It's just the people that are going to actually do the work of going around and evangelizing hop, going around and having these conversations and helping us to understand that lived operational reality that we were seeking to understand. Back to that story. And we were still kind of nervous. Yeah, we were still kind of nervous. And I remember one of the people that was now leading this effort was like a senior director, senior manager or something. I think director, like a senior director, been in the company for like 30, 40 years. Great, great person. Really, really, really like forward thinking in a lot of ways. Just a cool person. That for whatever reason hadn't found that tidal wave yet, right, to kind of like grow this kind of different approach. And I get it. Like you got like your managers hanging off your legs, and then those managers have like employees hanging off their legs, and you got like VPs and like all kind of stuff stretching out your arms, and then the board's chewing on your head. Like, I understand. This great person, great leader. But we were still like really kind of like maybe a little sketched out. We're like, I don't know, we're going to get fired from all this stuff. And they walked into the room one morning. We were kind of like working through some of this information. You could tell, like, senior director, they'd walk in, the room would get quiet. Quiet. Yeah, you know what I'm talking about. They'd get quiet. They would leave the room and start to roar again. They'd walk in, everybody go, then they're leaving. Yeah, that. And then one morning they walked in and we were somewhere talking around like, you know, rules. Yeah, like we got a lot of rules. People don't always follow the rules. Yeah, and like they have good reasons for not following the rules. Some of these rules are dumb. Some of these rules are great, but some of these rules are dumb. And some of these rules have really harsh penalties, especially some of these ones that are dumb. And they just walked in and they're sitting in the corner, and the room quieted, right? The room quieted. And then finally, like they had an opportunity to kind of like jump in and like, hey, listen, you know, I was driving in this morning. I got stuck in traffic. I got over in the HOV lane, the high occupancy vehicle lane, and I cranked it up to about 85. And I got here though. Yeah. I made it. Yeah. Just, you know, like doing normal stuff. And this is like, I just wanted to pop in and tell you all that, you know, like you're like, I mean it, like you all are doing awesome work and keep this up. I got your back. We're going to do cool stuff. I got to go jump in this meeting, but I will come back in any time in between. You let me know what you need and I will be there. And then they pop back out and the room's like, did you hear that? Like he was just sharing with us how he bent the rules, how it made sense for him to bend the rules. Like, I know the speed limit, where like the max speed limit all the way here, 65, you're doing 85. And I know what he drives. He doesn't drive an electric vehicle. He's not allowed in HOV lane and in the rush hour traffic. And I know it was just him. So he was double rules to get here to help us. He was getting here to get his work done. He was figuring it out on the fly. He didn't even realize what he did. I had the opportunity to chat with him about that afterwards. Like, you don't understand. Like, you know what you said. And at first he's like, oh God, I did it. It's like, no, like you said the greatest example. You were vulnerable. You shared me with people. Like, we all have those situations in our lives. We all deal with bends and making errors and rule breaks and rule adaptations, and we figure that stuff out. What he did in that, from that moment forward in this little group, and I'm sorry that this story might be long and rambly, but it's important, is he modeled that behavior. He walked in, and whether he knew it or not, he made it okay to be vulnerable, talk about error, to normalize that conversation, to admit it openly, and figure out better ways forward. So that is a huge action that especially we as leaders up through our organization can take. Set the example. Share our own fallibility. Talk about where we make mistakes, where we mess up, and how we can learn from them. Show that it's not just you pesky workers doing it. Of course it's not. We all are figuring it out as we go, mostly getting it right. And occasionally getting it wrong. Okay, more actions. I know this is a long one, but I want to leave you with all kinds of actionable stuff. Investigate context, not just actions. Up and out, right? We talk about it up and out instead of just down and in. Instead of moving down and in towards broke person, go up and out into context. right? So especially when we see these things, right? Post-event, it's really easy to move towards person's problem, treating them as if they are some basic system and they are just a broken part in said basic system. Treat human error as a starting point, but just as a starting point, and then go much, much deeper. Again, it's the beginning of the story, not the end of the story. Actively look for all of those other factors in the work environment, in those conditions. Was the procedure confusing? Was it unreliable? What are the actual unsaid, wink, wink, nod, nod expectations around these rules and procedures? Is it conflicting? Was the person fatigued and rushed? And if so, how do we get to that point of working fatigued and rushed people? And on, you know those things. Look for all of those other contributing things that feed into that context. We've said this one, but ask why. Like, how did this make sense? Why did this make sense? Because it totally made sense. We try to understand from their perspective, their goals, their knowledge, their pressures, not ours, but their boots, what they faced in that moment. And you can always go down that path of like mapping out that sequence. That's where I don't think like tools like fish bones or something, they're not like evil or bad. Like you can, if you need to get stuff on the wall, like post-it notes and flip charts, and this is how this happened and where this happened. Like if you have to do that, but move all of those things towards conditions, move all of those things towards like actual context and system problems and issues and the great stuff and the good stuff and the scary stuff and the weird stuff. Don't move it towards the person as like the final authority and preventing all of this stuff from happening. Move it towards the things that we can actually put our hands on and improve. Action number three, focus on building systems that are more resilient, systems that can adapt and anticipate and manage error. Now, we know that errors will happen. So we have to design systems that are error tolerant rather than error intolerant. We have to design our systems of work, the conditions in which people work in, accordingly. Focus on defenses and resilience. How can we make it harder for errors to occur around this thing? A great place to figure out where you need to do that is ask this question. It's in starting points. It's a great question. Where is it really, really easy to get things wrong? Where is it really, really easy to make a mistake with that? Where with that particular process, that particular thing that you work with or on or task that you do, where is it actually harder to get it wrong? Wait, harder to get it right than it is to get it wrong. Yeah, it's hard to get right, easy to get wrong. We pack a bunch of questions in there around that because it's a great starting point to move you towards places that you can actually reduce human error. And we can reduce it when we focus on all the things that we focused on. Can you outright prevent it? Nope. No, you can reduce it and prevent it where you can, and you should focus on those things. But I think the more important question that we have to ask is around that thing, especially that thing that has a lot of opportunity for really bad things to happen, whether it's cutting off fingers, killing people, catastrophic operational outcomes that cripple our plants and bankrupt us and on, or kills the environment. All the really, you know your critical risk. I don't have to preach to you about your critical risk. You know, they keep you up at night. Yeah, if you're sitting here listening to this at 2 a.m. in your bed, you know, because those are things are probably keeping you up right now. When errors do occur around those things, how do we reduce that outcome? This is error tolerance, right? When Sam gets that wrong, because Sam's a human and Sam's going to get that wrong, how do we make sure that doesn't kill Sam? That doesn't mean that we prevent the event necessarily. That doesn't mean that Sam doesn't get hurt. That might mean that Sam breaks his arm. But I'm going to tell you from Sam's perspective that if it's a choice between dead or broke arm, I will let you break both of my arms happily. I don't want them broke. Of course I don't. And if we can keep me from breaking my arms, I'm all for that. But if we can reduce death to broke arm or broke arm to bumps and scratches, I'm cool with that. I like it. I love it. I got to have more of it. Defenses and resilience. When you're thinking about these things that are overly complicated in particular, especially around processes that are overly complicated, decomplicate. I've heard this term right size recently, and I really like right size. Right size your processes and your procedures to what you were dealing with. We've gone down this path in safety and beyond of thinking that more paper equals more safe. More papers equal more operational excellence. So that's not true. I really like right size, and I think that is the right term. We've been using decluttering a lot, and I think decluttering is a word to use too. Like, you just got a bunch of junk that we don't need, and it's getting confusing. If you got a whole bunch of papers that you don't need, or a whole bunch of words on a paper that you don't need, and it's like 78 pages to do this thing, And really, you only need five. Like, realistically, you need five to do this extremely well. Get rid of the rest. Right size it for what you're working with. That is a huge thing that we can work on. Focus on simplifying where we should simplify. If it's complicated, decomplicate. Trying to simplify complex things usually doesn't work out very well for us. Those big, complex somethings, we need big, bright spotlights on them, highlighting their complexity, right? Highlighting that this is the way that we work our way through this, not trying to simplify complexity. And with things where we have a whole bunch of clutter, declutter, and things where we have a whole bunch of stuff that's grown and bloated, right size it. Now, the best people to work with to figure out how to do that and what you need to do where is to go do operational learning with the end user. Yeah, the people that actually have to use it. Pull in your subject matter experts around that said critical risk. Pull in the folks that actually have to work with that stuff and learn from them, with them together. That's really the right way to say it. Learn with them. Yeah, we don't need that thing. It just gets in the way. This thing works well, but we only use these three pages. Yeah, again, all action. Stuff you can actually do in your real world. Another thing here is improve your feedback mechanisms. Focus on feedback loops. Focus on making sure that the system provides clear and timely feedback to people about the state of the process and the potential for error and these areas where it's really easy to get things wrong, really hard to get things right. But complete that. Make sure that people can feed that information back from the process, back from the pointy end, up through the organization, so we can actually know a little bit about what the hell is going on in real time, where things are actively going wrong, not just getting the pager. You guys used to have pagers. I had a pager. You know, beep, 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 beep. Things have gone wrong. I want to hear beep, 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 beep. Things are going wrong. A lot of that comes from developing those really easy, clear, easy to use and clear feedback loops, feedback mechanisms within our processes. Now, another thing here, with maybe our last actions that we'll start to talk about here, and then we're going to just shut this thing down because we're already pushing over an hour, is this. The response question. Yeah, move from react to respond. We're going to do a full episode on the way that we respond matters, the way leaders respond matters, or however you want to say that. There's 100 different ways people say that nowadays. I would move you towards implementing easy-to-use reporting systems. Minimize the headache, minimize the anxiety, right? A really good point here, and I will bring it up again because it is one of the biggest actions I encourage folks to take right out of the gate and try this on for size. But if you have an incident investigation something, which I know that you do, if you're in an organization, you have an accident investigation policy, a form, you have all that stuff. It probably sounds something like this somewhere on the first page, at least maybe if not the first bullet point or near the first few bullet points of your process, says something that's like, did somebody mess up? Well, hey, you there, leader, if somebody messed up, then you need to make sure that that person is punished and punished severely in accordance with this chart before the end of shift. So what we're really saying is like discipline first, learn later. That's really what we're saying. Now, again, I said this early on. I'm not telling you to throw out your discipline policy. I'm not even telling you to stop blaming people. Like, blame fixes nothing. I don't think that blame's going to get you where you want to go. But if you're really like hot and heavy on trying to blame people, I don't know, maybe you're in the wrong place. No, but seriously, if you're, and I'm going to separate these things. Let's separate disciplinary action and blame. Okay, let's separate those things. Disciplinary action being this mechanism that we use within our organization. Maybe in the past to pour pain and shame and pain, mostly pain on people. To now view it as this thing that's like, hey, you don't fit in here. We're moving you out of the organization or giving you the opportunity to then figure out if you fit here. More of that. Think about it more like maybe the ejection seat, like armed. You need to figure out how you fit in here. We reserve that for those situations where I'm going to call it more of those screw you, I do what I want situations. And you will have that. You know that if you are a leader of people, you know that occasionally you will encounter screw you, I do what I want. Yeah, of course you will. They're way more rare than what we ever thought that they were. And I don't want to like dive too deep into this because it's teeing us up for our next conversation around blame fixes nothing, where I will share this and share this again and share this again. But if you're in that organization where like, okay, we're really blame focused, we're blame shame retrain focused, or maybe even if you're not and you've gone down this path for a while and your procedure still sounds like the procedure that we just unpacked there a bit, move it to the other side. Why the hell is it on the first page? Because if it's on the first page, if it's step number two in the process, if it's Sam gets hurt, next, see if Sam messed up. Guess what you're going to find at step two always? Ding, ding, ding. Winner, winner. Chicken dinner. You just won an all-expenses-paid vacation to Reno. I don't know. Somewhere, yeah. Buy yourself a trip to Reno. You earned it. But it's that. You're always going to find that Sam messed up because Sam has always messed up. When the outcome was good, Sam messed up. When the outcome was great, Sam made an error. When the outcome was perfect, the operational outcome was, well, we love it. It exceeded all of our expectations. Sam had well-intended violations. Of course I did, because I'm normal and I'm a human, and your employees are just the same. Absolutely, just as you are the same. If it's step two, it's just distracting. We're going to find it, or we're going to pursue that, and we're usually going to go down that path, because now we usually have that rule that says you got it if you're a leader, or if not, hey, you there, leader, you're going to get it. Of course I'm moving down that path. Well, I found that there was a violation, or I found that there was a mistake. Well, that's 3 days off without pay and a letter in your file. Oh, and when you come back, feel free to tell us the truth about what happened so we can learn and improve. Good luck. Yeah, good luck. Move it to the other side. What I'm telling you is move that disciplinary action lever to the other side of understanding. We don't understand jack shit at this point. All we understand is that somebody messed up. And when we discover that somebody messed up, our answer shouldn't be, aha, it should be, duh. It shouldn't be, I've just discovered the Holy Grail. It should be, well, yeah, like, of course people mess up, duh. Normalize the duh at this point in your process. And a great way to make that happen, a great way to operationalize that and to embed that into your process is to move it to the other side of the process. Make it the last step in the process, not the first step in the process. Do all the stuff that we just talked about. Error is normal. Start there. Seek to understand. Do that. Understand the context. Understand all of those other contributing factors and the conditions and the pressures and all of those things. You know the things. We've talked about a lot of the things and more. All of those things. Understand all of that stuff. And if you get to the end of that process and you go, you know what, I think disciplinary action is probably the right move. Guess what? Disciplinary action might actually be the right move. This is not rocket math, right? Understand as best as we can. Learning from the people that experienced the event. Learning with the people that experienced the event. And gain all of that operational information and learning and understanding. And develop all of that industrial empathy on the front end. And then when you get to the disciplinary action piece, maybe you've just right-sized disciplinary action. Instead of being used in 100% of the cases, you start to realize, like, wait a second, once we actually understand all of this stuff, it's used in like 3% of the cases. It's used in like 8% of the cases. When you move it to the other side of action, or I got too obsessed with this action stuff lately. When you move it to the other side of understanding through the actions that we've discussed and more, you start to see that, well, maybe we've just been doing this a lot where we shouldn't have done it. And that's probably caused a lot more harm than it's done good. And by understanding first, we start to discipline where we actually really, really, really need to or have to discipline instead of just using it as the easy button. That's a great, 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 great tactic that you can go do right now. You can just rewrite stuff right now. You know that you have word and you know who can approve that thing. And go do that and get it approved. Move it to the other side. Even if you've not gone very deep into this hop journey, and maybe you don't want to go into this hop journey, that's okay. It's your organization. Have fun. But you can do that. You absolutely can do that. So there you go. This was a long one. I want to continue, though. I want to continue to maybe pour out some of these ideas for action. I did a lot of that in 10 ideas too, around the 10 ideas. We're going to get into the 10 ideas as part of this series. Not all of them, but some really key ones, I think, because if we try to go through every single principle, every single idea, we're already at 15. If we go through some of the other stuff that I want to go through with this around operational curiosity and operational learning, then we're going to be at least 25. So I don't want to do 30 episodes on this. So we're going to try to keep this at wherever it lands. You know how I do. But we'll see. We'll see. This is a long one. We had a big unpack around expectations and the pre-warning. What do we call it? Yeah, you know, my brain's fried at this point talking about all these actions. But you get the point. And we unpacked a bunch of actions around error is normal. We talked about error is normal. I'm going to start turning these into maybe some blog stuff over on the website too. Maybe embed this episode there so you can have an easy place to go find it. And then as these come out, we'll maybe pull this into one big long something so it's easy for you to share and use in your organization. That's all I've got for you today, though. If you like this, if you love this, if you got to have more of this, send me an email. Let me know. We're going to really start unpacking these things again. Air is Normal is now out of the way. Next episode, we'll move into Blame Fixes Nothing. We'll have some guests, I think, peppered in between there. Maybe we'll get their take on some of this stuff as we go and insert some sound bites. I don't know. That way you don't just have to listen to me tell you about all of this sort of stuff. But make sure you join us next time here on the Hop Nerd Podcast, where we will unpack probably the most controversial principle of human and organizational performance, and that is blame fixes nothing. I think we got a good start on it today. Maybe it'll make that one a little bit shorter. In the meantime, do me a favor, check out the website, thehopnerd.com, and do me a huge favor, because I just know how valuable these things are to all the organizations that are using them. If you are not using Starting Points, go check out thehopnerd.com/S. If you are using Starting Points, you're loving these things. I know, I'm hearing from you all the time. Tell people about them. Post them on social media. I've done a real bad job of telling people about how amazing, how kick-ass our little card decks are. I've seen a lot of you posting them. Post them, share them, tag us in it. We'll like them. We'll share them. We'll get you that reach you're looking for. We'll do all that kind of sort of stuff. I love seeing these things in the real world in use. I was just interacting with a post the other day of people using our cards during a workshop, and I'm like, that's the coolest thing ever. And that's all we hear about these things is that people love them. They're easy peasy, lemon squeezy. If you're interested in picking up the original card decks, the journals, or joining the ever-growing list of organizations that are licensing to customize and print in-house and do all kinds of cool stuff with Starting Points, you can check out the licensing options at the same website, thehopnerd.com/SP. If you need a hand on your hop journey, thehopnerd@gmail.com. Until next time, it is Sam Goodman from the Hop Nerd Podcast signing off. Love you. Mean it. Bye, everybody. Bye. For listening, everybody. We greatly appreciate all of your support of the Hop Nerd Podcast and the Hop Nerd LLC. If you need a little bit of help with bringing human and organizational performance to life, if you would like to take your efforts around learning and improving to the next level, yep, I can help with that. Head over to www.thehopnerd.com or send me an email, thehopnerd@gmail.com. Until next time, bye, everybody. Bye.